well, 10, 15 years ago. So that's the way in which, you know, popular pressure can create openings and shift things. It doesn't change the, you know, the bottom line imperatives of these institutions, and there still are hard limits on what, you know, the mainstream media will report when it comes to indigenous struggles. They won't, for instance, report critically about the way that indigenous land wealth is what subsidizes this country, you know, not in any kind of consistent way, or the ongoing land theft that happens in places across this country. But there are openings for columnists to sometimes get their, you know, perspective through. And I think that's going to happen on Palestine as well. It already is happening to a certain extent, and I think that will increase.
Yeah.
In terms of reliable reporting on what's going on in Gaza, I'm familiar with sources within Israel, like Haaretz and Channel 12, sources like Al Jazeera, secondary sources like Mehdi Hassan and even Hassan Piker. But I'm more ignorant on like Palestinian sources, or even more reliable Canadian sources. I have a few down now. But if you could broaden my scope on where to go for more reliable reporting, I'd appreciate that. And then also, just if I could ask a second question, if you sure. have any advice for Canadian labor, for unions, if you think there's anything that we ought to be doing differently from within the labor movement.
Well, Plus 972 is an incredible collaboration of Israeli and Palestinian journalists, and they have broken some of the biggest journalistic stories, including exposing the AI tool Lavender that Israel has used to massively increase the assassination targets. I mean, Al Jazeera definitely hires Palestinian journalists. Who else is there?
Well, I mean, there's innumerable vloggers, the ones who've survived, you know, and they're posting on Instagram and TikTok.
I was going to offer the Palestine Chronicle and Electronic Intifada.
And in fact, Electronic Intifada has a Canadian working for them, John Elmer, who does incredible work on the Israeli military tactics and those used by the kind of armed Palestinian resistance. So that's one to check out.
Middle East Eye. Okay. And The Gray Zone.
I don't love The Gray Zone.
What? Yeah, well, anyway.
Did you want to speak about the last two sections in your book on social change and what are some of those media sources that can be visited for more information?
Sure. Mm-hmm. And maybe I can tie in the second question about the labor movement, which I think is the labor movement is utterly essential to shifting Canadian policy. And there have been, you know, admirable efforts on the part of some rank and file formations like Labor for Palestine, which has been doing incredible work initially to try to stop the Saudi arms deals, and then more recently to start pushing for labor unions to stop shipping hot cargo, what's known as hot cargo. So, you know, the arms shipments have to get taken to a port in Canada before they get shipped abroad. And so there's been a push within Unifor and other unions in Canada to pressure their peers within the broader labor movement to stop shipping hot cargo, as we've seen in places like Italy and other places in Europe, in South Africa as well. Unions are refusing to ship weapons that are going to Israel. So that's been really promising and heartening to see. And I would say continuing those efforts and broadening them. There's been efforts to try to get the broader House of Labor through the CLC to endorse and act on those resolutions. So that's been great to see. But it's true that ultimately the power that labor unions have, especially to refuse labor on these questions, is the most powerful tool we have. As for that broader, other media outlets, I mean, the Maple is one I mentioned that's terrific. Other outlets like The Grind in Toronto and Briar Patch, have done really good work. Who else is there?
Substack.
Many Substack.
Substack.
Substack?
Well, MJ Rosenberg, Avram Berg.
Oh, I don't know these ones.
Okay. Yeah. Any further questions? Yeah.
I think sometimes it's more blatant in terms of censorship.
Could you speak up a little?
It's sometimes more blatant in terms of censorship. I remember Linda McQuaig talking about how they wouldn't allow her to use the word class. and they probably don't anymore, I mean, even now. Also, I worked at CBC when we were dealing with the Canada-US Free Trade Agreement, and we always had to have both sides. So the pro-free trade people would not join an interview, so we'd have to cancel it.
Huh.
So that's how they censored the whole subject. If we had free trade, I remember I was supposed to do something on free trade in the wine industry, and they wouldn't show up, so we had to cancel it. So it is bad. The other thing I noticed, I remember when Susan Ormiston was in the Middle East, in Gaza and Israel, she always gave Netanyahu or Israel, and I've seen this on CBC Radio, the last word. Mm-hmm. They always leave people with that last word. But I wanted to ask about the whatever's happening in Israel in terms of people rising up. I think they had 200,000 in Tel Aviv a couple of days ago. Do you have much hope in that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the only way things will ever change in Israel, is a combination of pressure from abroad, from us forcing our governments to relent on arming and backing Israel, but ultimately any kind of enduring change will also have to come from within Israel. My view of the matter has always been that the main culprits in places with respect to Israel and Palestine is the U.S. government and the Israeli regime. And I think they have made victims not just of the Palestinians, but of their own civilians. Despite there being outlets like Haaretz and others in Israel that do incredibly admirable work, even do criticism of their own government that you would never find in the mainstream media in a country like Canada, most Israelis are living in a sea of propaganda that makes it very, very hard for them to see and understand the humanity of Palestinians. And I think that does speak to the levels of racism that Israelis view Palestinians with. But I think there are contradictory tendencies in that society, there is, I think, an enduring appetite for peace among people when they aren't, whipped into a racist fury. So I think if we in the West can rein in our own governments, I think it would create more space and opportunity for Israeli citizens working with Palestinians to rein in their own government, too.
I'm going to take a little more pessimistic attitude on that, because I think, you have this dynamic going on in Israel now where the demonstrations that preceded October 7th were largely about rights for Jewish Israelis and not for the 20% of the population that is actually Muslim and Christian. So there's completely inward focus, even before that. And then, of course, afterward, and I think these folks have to be supported. There is you know, a movement for dialogue and mutual support and within Israel, but it's so narrow. It is so small. And I think what Netanyahu and his right-wing coalition has been able to capture is this critical mass of Israelis, you know, both ultra-religious as well as some Israelis who have been disenfranchised from labor, and create this coalition, even as, you know, what one could have called the liberal Zionists are shrinking. And they're shrinking not just because they don't have the space in the political spectrum, but they're also, Israel has the highest percentage of its population with dual passports. Mm-hmm. So you've got so many people with one foot in the country and one foot out of the country. You know, and it's becoming, you know, I think more and more Israelis who don't see a future in that country and are actually leaving. So which is, you know, making it this hardcore, you know, hardwired into Israel's military-industrial complex. The number of, you know, the amount of exports has, over the last decade, has just, you know, quadrupled. You know, it's a major part of their economy. So, I mean, all these things are just entrenching, you know, the kind of policies and the annexationist, you know, imperative that people like Netanyahu are carrying out in this period. And, of course, added to that is now the Trump administration with its transactional approach. So I think we're, you know, it's going to take concerted effort. It's obviously, it's not going to come in the short term or maybe even long term from the United States. And within Israel, I don't see, you know, I see a movement to get back the hostages. Israel's facing a crisis with the military. They're going to run out of soldiers. And if the war would actually spread, you know, they'd be hard-pressed. But, you know, I think those are the things that might be weighing on the Israeli government to changing policies, at least in the short term. And, you know, the crisis of trying to recruit ultra-Orthodox soldiers, you know, who've been resisting. So there's these internal dynamics and losing markets, et cetera, et cetera. But there's this very weird configuration of the Israeli public at this point, you know. And so I'm a bit pessimistic about the, you know, impulse for internal change. And obviously, on the outside, there's not a lot of pressure brought to bear on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the thing that can give one hope is that, unlike, for instance, in a situation like South African apartheid, where South Africa was a relatively autonomous country, and it was much harder to bring pressure to bear on it. And those transformations ultimately that happened in the country were driven internally. Israel can only take things as far as its Western masters let them. And that's been clear, especially through this genocide, where they know that if the if the United States of America says no more, stops shipping them the bombs that they use to drop on Gazans, sends them the military aid and money that they use to buy more American weapons, then what's unfolding in Gaza will have to end. And the annexation projects in the West Bank will have to end. And I think that should give us hope because in Canada, like if Canada starts to shift and if other Western European countries start to shift as well, from just symbolic actions to concrete policy shifts, I think that will also bring pressure to bear on the U.S. And all it really would take is a phone call, probably not one that will come from Donald Trump, but maybe from a Democratic president a few years down the line. And then I think we would see very quick shifts happen in Israel, the same way that everyone in 1988 and 1989 didn't think that apartheid was going to fall in South Africa. It very quickly did.
Yeah. Oscar in the back? Okay, and then we'll wrap up. And by the way, there is some food sitting out there and drink.
Snacks.
Yeah, snacks. Yeah, there was another question. Sorry.
Can I just, before people...
Sure,
run,
yeah. Marilyn.
I really appreciate Oscar and Nicola agreeing to be a co-host to Independent Jewish Voices to do this tonight. It's a risky issue, as you all know. It's very controversial, and we can show our support by buying the book. And Martin will be here to
sign. So, in the back, I think there was a question. Did you? Another question?
I just had a question about Canadian media, bringing it back to that, and holding Canadian media accountable. Because I disclose I'm one of those CJMP letter writers, so I'm going to see Jason tomorrow in a scrum tomorrow morning. Anyway, so we send out the letters, and sometimes they go to the CBSC, which is the Canadian Broadcast Standards Council, or the NNC, National News Media Council, or the CBC Ombudsman. But clearly, it's a smokescreen for, upholding. They don't really do anything. Most complaints are rejected, and when they aren't, you get some sort of a bland, milquetoast kind of ruling, which is kind of toothless and meaningless. So I would like to know if there's some other higher form of authority that could basically grill the media. I saw in the UK recently, the Jonathan Cook post, they had the BBC chief editor just getting grilled by some journalists about Gaza coverage. I don't think it's made any difference to their coverage, but I don't know if you know of any triggers like that or levers that could be pulled to sort of bring some of these people in and ask them the hard questions that they won't answer.
Jason loves to talk about these newspaper councils, and I know some it's the most boring subject. I think you honestly, I'm not as familiar with them as I think you are and Jason, and I think you also answered your question in that they are toothless. They're creatures of the corporate media. There isn't a higher power other than one hopes these journalists' own conscience. And maybe if we lived in a different world, eventually a trial docket in the Hague. I somehow doubt that will be the end point for some of the columnists who have most cheered on the destruction of Gaza in our country. I think that the thing we can best do is, vent through complaints to them, which I think tilt the playing field in terms of what honest reporting does. And it's been actually quite remarkable that, I don't know if people know of honest reporting. It's a right-wing pro-Israel flak machine that does these coordinated campaigns sending thousands of emails to editors and outlets, and we're proud at The Breach to have been the subject of a few of their angry campaigns. It's definitely a badge of honor. It's been quite interesting to see that their own credibility has been tarnished over the last few years, and the mainstream media take them less seriously than they used to, in part because of some of the exposés that have been written about their work, including in this book, and also just the work of CJPME in trying to correct the record. But I think the only other thing to do is just to keep building up the strength and power of independent media. While we are incomparably smaller in resources and size, you know, we do sometimes have outsized impact. Like at the Breach, for instance, I mean, our annual budget is about half of what the publisher at the Globe and Mail makes just in terms of his salary. So, but I, you know, we hear frequently from reporters in some of these outlets that our stuff gets circulated on their Slacks and on their, you know, their workplaces. So they are reading us. So you can make an impact by supporting independent media.
We should probably, unless somebody else has something, we really should probably wrap up.
Yeah,
that's right.
Give people time to
sign their
book.
Yeah.
and Martin.
Yeah, thank you very much, Martin.
And thank you, Ariel.
Yeah.
I want to thank Ariel and Martin both for coming
here. Thank you, Independent Jewish Voices. Thank you.
And begun just a few minutes after 4 o'clock, you heard again the book launch event at Novel Idea Bookstore, what happened September 29th. And the launch was of a book called When Genocide Wasn't a News. And it was a discussion and then a Q&A after, but a good discussion between Mark and Martin Lukacs, journalist, author, managing editor of the news website The Breach, and co-editor of the book of that was launching that evening, a collection of essays critiquing Canadian media treatment of Gaza, and was joined by, in that discussion, by professor of history Ariel Saltzman. Right now, before we move on into the second segment of the show today, my heartfelt thanks again to all of you for having tuned into the first section, our first segment, I guess is a better word, and to Martin and Ariel and all others who helped bring together and present the event there that evening. And, of course, to Novel Idea Bookstore for always being there. It is about 22 minutes after 5 o'clock at this point. And we'll move into the second segment. But before we do that, I should probably do this. And then I will be right back.
Novel Idea.
Hello, and welcome to Salt Licht and Rapture. I'm your host, Nishan Tung. Salt Licht and Rapture is a sonic exploration of, to quote Virginia Woolf, violent waves of emotion. Featuring both known and lesser-known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Partners in Mission Food Bank could not exist without the loyalty, dedication, and support of volunteers, some of whom have been with us for over 30 years. Our team of volunteers consists of individuals who continually devote both their time and skills on a regular basis in an effort to make a positive impact on hunger and the food needs of the community. Volunteering has no age limits. Your commitment and energy is enough. It is a great way to make new friends and contribute to your community. Partners in Mission Food Bank volunteers provide essential services in many ways, including assembling daily hampers, sorting food donations, breaking down and portioning bulk items, packing eggs into cartons, keeping the warehouse safe and clean, and providing helpful input to other volunteers and staff. Interested in volunteering with Partners in Mission Food Bank? Please call our volunteer coordinator at 613-544-4100.
Garage rock, hip-hop, folk, electropop, new, Canadian, and even local, Indie Wake Up handles your morning. Here for you, Kingston. Weekday mornings from 8 to 10. On the one, the only, CFRC 101.9 FM.
And now a bit more officially, since we're well into the second hour, but as we start to introduce maybe a more standard greeting, I guess, to the second segment of the show today. And I will say you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And it is about getting close to 26 minutes after 5 o'clock. Just a quick reminder that every week, both hours of this show are uploaded to my personal blog space for the show at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. And they will remain there for 3 years. Now, with just a little bit, about a half an hour or so left, I don't always have time to play music on this show. So when I do get a chance like this, I will do a little bit of that. But I'm also going to share with you some upcoming maybe calls for submissions, but also events. It's getting to be kind of busy season for those, and there are some coming up pretty immediately. So I may do those first and then see if we get into the calls for submissions. But what I'm going to do to lead it off, I'm going to play a couple of songs by one artist off the same album, and I will just introduce it after and I'll credit it fully after. How's that? Here we go.
Look out, mama, there's a white boat.
Mile away. I hope he didn't come.
and sorry for that fumbling around in the middle there. I'll tell you what I tried to play, and then I tell you what I first. Maybe I should tell you what I played. How's that? Both songs were off of Neil Young and Crazy Horse's album called Russ Never Sleeps. First one was called Powder Finger, and I was going to end up with something a little bit more mellow and off of that same album, and also my favorite cut, I think, off of the album, Thrasher, but I couldn't get it to play, so I tried a couple of different things, a couple of different ways, but they didn't work. So you heard instead, sounds like a live version of Hey Hey My My Into the Black, and off of that same album. So again, Neil Young and Crazy Horse. I'm going to have another song to take us out of here at the very end of the show. So I did want to credit those. And you are listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM and www.cfrc.ca. And I still have easily 10 or so minutes to share with you some upcoming events. Let's do that first. And before I get too far into it, because I've got things all the way into December at this point, or close to it, I'll do some of the more, the ones that are coming sooner. And then what I will do is also maybe share a few calls for submissions that are going to expire, at least the ones that are going to expire very soon. How's that? So, with that said, and I've got two different lists here, so I'm working off of two different sheets. First things coming up, we've got some things coming up this weekend, actually. Brent Raycroft will be doing the inaugural reading as they open up. This is going to be at the Bookshop Annex in Tamworth. That is a second location for the bookshop that's been up there for a number of years. This one is that's right behind their house. And this one, the Bookshop Annex, is more downtown on a main street. And they've had this location now for, I don't know, maybe half a year. I don't know if it's been that long, or it could be longer. I can't keep track of time. But anyway, one of the things they might be setting up doing there are readings. And so this is their inaugural reading. And I think I'm taking this from their Instagram page. It says Brent Raycroft will be the inaugural reader with his reading at the quite new the Bookshop Annex in Tamworth. His work has appeared in magazines, journals, and anthologies. He lives with his family in Sydenham. Again, you can go to the IG, the Bookshop's IG page for this event. So, their location, the Bookshop Annex, is located at 12 Concession Street North in Tamworth. That's coming up tomorrow at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Then coming up tomorrow evening, there will be another book launch event at Novel Idea Bookstore here in Kingston. That one will happen at 7 p.m. tomorrow, October 18th. Sadiqa Demeyer will be launching and reading from her new book, an essay collection called In the Field. Reading with her will be James Carnes, author of In Crises, On Crisis, a collection of essays as well. And you can always go to Novel Ideas Facebook event or Facebook page, Novel Ideas Facebook page, for more information about any events they have there. Then coming up, I thought there was something on Monday, maybe not. Coming up on Tuesday, October 21st from 2:30 to 4 p.m. This will be, I don't know if they're like their 12th or 13th year that they've been doing this. It could be longer, but this is their annual, the page lecture, and it's called the 2025 Page Lecture, and it's also titled Alive on the Page, featuring Lynn Henry. This is it's being put on by Queen's Department of English, and a quote from their Facebook page, it looks like, yes. Lynn Henry is the editor-in-chief at NOMF Canada and publishing director of Alchemy there. And what is a page? This seemingly simple question unlocks a world of inquiry for a book editor. You can go to, let me see here, you can register for tickets. They're free tickets, but go register for tickets for www.eventbrite.ca/e/the-page-lecture-tickets. Also, just go to their Facebook page. And there's an October 29th post that has all the information as well. So again, it's the Queen's Department of English Lit and Creative Writing Facebook page, and that's where you'll find it on their October 9th post. It has all the links that you'll need and also all the information. And this will be held Tuesday, October 21st, 2:30 to 4 p.m. in room 517 Watson Hall and Queens. Then that evening, on the 21st, it's a monthly event, poetry performed with improvised music called Quirks of Human Nature. Third Tuesday night of the month series, organized and presented by Deb Shermans and Meg Freer, October's featured poet. These are all going to be Wintergreen poets. You might recognize that I played a book launch event featuring some of these. Maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, somewhere in there. Anyway, so some of the names will sound familiar, but their featured poet will be Susan Wismer, who has a brand new book out. And the featured musicians will be the Subjunctives, and they are Irwin and Irwin Strait and Val Hamilton. Bonus poets that you'll hear that evening: Calista Markatich, Sheila Stewart, Liz Huntley Jensk, and Mary Alice Thompson. Again, Deb Sherman's on piano, and again, co-MC, and again, Meg Freer MCs. That's happening Tuesday again, October 21st, from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. It's going to be held at the Timeout Bar and Bistro. Coming up, too, you might, this is more art-related than lit-related, but the Kingston School of Art has moved. They were kind of, they've given up their old space, and they were waiting to find a great new place, and they seem to have found that now. And so they're going to be located now at the Kingston School of Art, at Providence Village, which is located at 1200 Princess Street. It says West Entrance. They've got five classes or programs that they're going to initiate this fall, and they all start this coming week. So, well, not all of them, but most of them start this coming week. So they're going to have oil paintings, two different titles for what they, well, let's just do this, oil paintings, painting the person, and the other one, perfection in the process, two different classes or programs. That one will run from October 21st to December 16th. And there's another one, two other ones, Learn to Draw. They're two different, and Advanced Learn to Draw. Those are happening. Those start October 23rd and run through December 18th. They also have another one, but it doesn't start until November. So I'll let you go to the website and find that out. But they also have one for kids as well. And that might be the November one. I didn't copy that over, I don't think, in the new. Yeah. So you know what? I'm just going to tell you their website, because if you're interested, I'd really highly suggest that you go there. They could be filling up quickly. So www.ksoa.info/. How's that? Again, those are starting this week. Then coming up, another novel idea book launch will be happening on Thursday, October 23rd. And Rob and Sarah with Where Something Else Now, a book launch that was going to happen earlier but just got rescheduled. And so, again, once it gets go now to Novel Ideas Facebook page, and you'll get all the information there. Again, October 23rd, 7 p.m. Also, Driftline Press is back, and it's different now, and it's been redesigned. So they do have a Facebook page. I would suggest you go there and get more information and how to register for the event. It's going to be happening at the Baby Grand in the Grand Theater. This is coming up next Friday evening, October 24th at 7 p.m. And I think I'm going to have to stop there with these, but definitely do check that out. You will need to get tickets at Eventbrite as well. I think it's Eventbrite, or it might be just through the theater. But anyway, just go to their Facebook page. Again, Driftline Press and Reading Series. So hope to see you there. I'm definitely going to be there. Again, I love the old series, and I love the concept of the new series now as well, too. And let's see what I'm doing for time here. I think I may have to, got a few more announcements here to share with you that are recorded. So I think I'll do those now, and then I'll be right back. How's that?
One of the most bitter, hard-hitting rivalries in the OUA takes center stage on Saturday, October 18th, as the Queens Gaels host the Windsor Lancers in a homecoming clash. Can the Gaels close out the 2025 regular season with their biggest win to date, or will the Lancers avenge last season's heartbreaking playoff defeat? Two of Ontario's best do battle for pride, for glory, and for playoff position. Gaels versus Lancers. Everything to prove. Everything to lose. Catch it all on CFRC 101.9 FM. We go live at 12:45 with the Grad Club pregame show ahead of the scheduled 1 p.m. kickoff.
Have you been dumped? Left all alone? Just want to find your soulmate? Look no further, because your new best friend is waiting for you at the Kingston Humane Society. The Kingston Humane Society is a nonprofit animal organization founded in 1884 that is supported solely by the community, receiving no government funding to assist in their mission of caring for injured, abused, and homeless animals, with the goal of creating families and homes for the animals. They are the only open shelter in the region, accepting every animal brought to them with compassion, respect, and humane assistance. If you want to donate to help these animals find their best friends, or if you're interested in finding the new love of your life, please visit kingstonhumanesociety.ca. Everyone just needs a little love.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
And you are listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Right now, as we begin to slide out of here, I'm just checking one more thing to see if I have time. Might have time. Let's do this. There's a couple of there's one poetry prize coming up. CEV2's the Foster Poetry Prize, Emerging Poets Any Age, and says from their website, calling all emerging poets, the Foster Poetry Prize awards $1,000 in publication and CEV2 to the author of the winning poem. You know what? Their deadline, their final deadline is November 1st. So I'm just going to give you their website and you can check everything out there. Contemporary Verse 2, that's the numeral 2, so Contemporary Verse 2, all one word, .submittable.com/submit. So there you go. I'm going to let you go with that, and that's all I have time for as far as sharing any calls for submissions. What I will do is thank you for tuning into the show today. I hope you enjoyed it. My heartfelt thanks for tuning in. You are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. Just a reminder that I do upload both hours of this show every day to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on CFRCFM.wordpress.com. They do remain there for 3 years. After the show ends, I would encourage you, let's put it that way, stay tuned for 2 hours of East Coast music in a show called Saltwater Music, hosted by Rob Carnell. To take us out of here and into that, still one of my favorite albums that I own. It's a 2007 album by Jen Grant called Orchestra for the Moon. It was her, I believe that was her first album. She was touring Canada with it at some point a little bit later on, and I caught her in a small house concert, and it was probably one of the best experiences I ever had. So here's Jen Grant with Dreamer. Dreamer.
And you're listening to CFRC here at 101.9 FM, broadcast of the